morning, everybody. I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. Sherry, can you do the roll call?
Debbie Berry.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from our November meeting?
We do.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Perfect. Let's jump right to the financial report, please, Wade.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll wait till they get the PowerPoint queued up. And here are the results as of the end, as of November 30, 2022. So 11 months, almost.
And music.
Yeah. Almost through the fiscal year. I've highlighted a few items I wanted to draw to your attention. The first one is in, see if I can get this pointer going. No, that's not the pointer. There it is. The yellow number, that's our property tax revenue. And through the first 11 months of the year, we're up 1.03%. And that's consistent with what we talk about when we budget. We talk about 1 to 1.5% increase in real estate tax revenue each year due to new construction. When a levy's passed, a reduction factor locks in, so the tax does not go up in existing homes, but you're going to realize revenue on new construction. And so that's right in line with what was projected over the 10-year forecast 10 years ago. The second item is primarily grants. We've talked about this many times, but it is important, I guess, that we just keep reminding everyone it's down substantially because we had grant revenue in 2021 due to Tiger, disaster relief, shuttered venues, all of those things came in. We received a fair amount of grant revenue this year, over $11 million. But when you compare it to a year where you had so much grant revenue due to COVID and other things, it looks like it's down.
Excuse me, just a little question on the first item. Do we know where new construction concentrates? Do we have any way to ascertain that from the data?
I could, Commissioner.
Not that it would be a priority, but I'd just be curious.
The direct answer is yes. We could ask the county because they break it down into the political subdivisions where they collect revenue and they do the distribution.
I wonder if there are trends there where we can see over time.
I'll follow up on that with the county budget commission.
Yes, it's not a biggie, but just curious.
See where it's happening.
That's can I ask a stupid question? On the way that the revenues go up from taxes, when the values go up, does the whole thing come up and do we get additional income when the real estate taxes go up when houses are reappraised and that sort of thing, right?
No. So, for example, Commissioner, on your home with the levy that was just passed, you'll pay the same amount of tax to the Metro Parks for that levy for 10 years. It will not increase at all.
Yeah.
On your personal home. But if a new home's built or they put an addition onto a home, then you would pay tax on that improvement or on that increase in value. But your current home, you will not pay.
Okay. So when you make an adjustment to the house, okay, I understand.
Because you've enhanced the value versus having it appreciate.
Yeah.
So where does that money go then? So if there is a reevaluation of a property tax and you as an individual are paying more taxes, does that just go to the county?
When you say when you do,
it'll be adjusted within 10 years, correct?
An
actual valuation of my home would be adjusted in 10 years.
It actually adjusts every 3 years on the triennial and every 6 years, but there is no new tax, Commissioner. So if your home, let's say, went up 10% in value,
yep,
your taxes would not go up 10%. They would stay the same. So there is no additional money.
We don't get any.
We don't get any additional money. The schools, no one gets any additional money due to appreciation.
Okay.
If that's the reduction factor. So when you pass a 2.7 mil levy, and we had talked about this, we were only collecting between 2.2 and 2.3 mils. We weren't really getting 2.7 mils because value had gone up.
So I understand that, yeah. But I, as an individual, I'm paying more, correct? Like when it's reevaluated, I'm putting more into the system. Does that just go to the county then?
The only way you'd put more into the system is if there was another different levy, but not for us. I'm thinking about just us, but you shouldn't be putting, if everybody's levy stayed the same, you should put no more money into the system.
The question, though, is where is that other money? Where is the money that you're paying extra?
I'm not asking about levy money. I'm asking about just.
So you do pay more taxes when your house goes up, but the levies, the millage is not impacted. So us who are supported by the millages.
Yep.
That we, as an entity, we don't get more money. Yes, the county will take that.
Okay, that was my question. It goes to the county. Got it. Okay, thank you.
The other item that I wanted to point out was charges for services. And charges for services are up 9.7% year to date. And we're going to go through that in detail because that's spread throughout the organization. Some of it is present in the zoo. Some of it's present in golf, and some of it is present in the enterprise operations. And now I boxed all of these in green. Those are the increases that we're seeing: salaries, contractual services, and operations. Let's start with salaries, which is payroll and benefits. That's up about 9.5% year to date. And that's a combination of two factors. We've gotten to what I would call staffing very consistent with what we had pre-COVID. And then there are also compensation increases as you go along, modest compensation increases. Those two factors have driven that up. Operational costs are up 18.9%, which that's right there. And I break that down into two pieces. We know that inflation is running at about 8 or 9%. So that's part of the increase. The other part of the increase is as we've increased our operation, we've gone back to the full level of service, we're incurring more costs and operations for commodities and things like that. So it's inflation and increased operation, but that's up about 18.9%. Contractual services is up 7%. That's just an increase in what we pay our contractors. We'll talk about this with each organization, but if you can just assume or keep in mind that salaries and benefits across the organization is always going to be up about 10% from 21 to 22 due to getting staffing back to more normal levels and then market increases that we've seen. Now we'll go to the zoo. The one item I highlighted on the current month, that's our payment coming in from the Zoological Society. We did look ahead. There's no money being received in December, and there was no money received in December of 21 either. So they're paying in a little different cycle now. It's quarterly, but the real upside is that you can see the increase that we received from the Zoological Society this year is almost $564,000, which is a 25% increase, which is very good. Their support for us. I did not highlight this, but it's something that we're keeping an eye on. If you look at our general admission revenues, they're down slightly from 21, but attendance has been good and actually up slightly. But if the attendance goes up on a Monday or a day where we're not collecting revenue, you won't see that. But I would say the zoo operation is doing well, even though that general admission revenue number is down slightly. The first item, salaries and benefits, the zoo tracks with what we were just talking about. It's up 9.47% through the first 11 months, part of a due to back to more normalized staffing, even though the zoo did not see staffing reductions as much as we're going to see in the enterprise fund because their operations maintained. And then we had market increases. Where you really see an increase is in operational costs. That's up 19.5%, just the cost of everything that they need to run the zoo, all of their operating costs, 19% year to date. So just goes to show how difficult it is in this inflationary time to do the things we do. So that's up 19%. The one thing, and I didn't put the number here, but if you look at this subsidy, and Brian and I were talking about this because this has come a long way, the operating subsidy year to date is 27%, only 27%, which the goal is 50%. And prior to my getting here, I was told it was much more than that. So to be at a 27% subsidy is a great achievement for the zoo. I projected out what I would assume would be normal revenues for December of 22 and expenses. And if my projection's right, the subsidy for this year will be about 30%. And Brian said at one point it was about 70%. So we've gone from 70% to 30%. So compliments to the zoo and how they're managing. They're doing a great job of getting that subsidy down. Even when you roll in the subsidy for capital, the subsidy right now is 32%. It would be about 35%. All the capital, all the operations, and it's still being subsidized well below the target of 50%.
Interesting.
Golf, this is the one I always love to talk about because they're just doing well. The one thing I noticed is that when you look at the operating surplus, November of 22 almost approximates November of 21. But what I really like to go to right away is just this is the $623,000 in revenue from 22 above revenue from 21 year to date is up 13.3%. And that's primarily due to rounds played. We didn't increase our rates per round substantially this year, if at all, but the rounds played are there. You can see that that also shows up in food service, which is up almost 30%, 29.3. So not only are we getting golfers out to play golf for others, but they're also
hungry for golf.
They're hungry, they're eating, they're drinking. And then one thing, it's a smaller number, but it did catch my attention. This is our pro services right there. That's up 80%. Wow. And I think we should compliment the golf staff because that was a conscious effort to bring on pros who could provide lessons. And so that generating incremental revenue. But if we can continue that trend, we're going to continue to see more revenue, which I think also grows the game, mm-hmm. brings people out and they eat, they play golf. So the pros are doing a wonderful job of, if you look at their revenue year to date from where they are this year to where they were last year. And that's just our pros getting people in and giving lots of lessons. Now, the expenses, salaries and benefits here, that's up 18%. I'd said 10% was the marker. And the biggest reason is if you look at the 21 number, it's a little bit skewed because we didn't have some key positions on till sometime into 21. So we didn't have a full year. Best example was our golf director, manager at Seneca, turf manager. But we do have them on a full year in 22. So when you compare 21 to 22, and Commissioner Rinker, we have talked about this. We're going to start looking back more than 1 year because when you look at just 2 years, it does get distorted. It looks like their salaries and benefits are up more than others. That's because they were less than fully staffed. They were missing key positions there. But they're just doing a wonderful job. They're just can't say enough good things about how well golf's doing. Now we'll go to the next page. And I just wanted to focus on two. And we'll just, it's pretty simple. You can see it. Manikiki and Shawnee, they're in yellow. Those are the only two courses right now where their revenue in 22 is behind their revenue year to date in 21. Different reasons. We're talking with Joe and Damien about, hey, what's going on there? But there could be different reasons. But again, I don't want to act like that's a really bad thing. They had $540,000 in operating revenue. This year they got $491,000. So they're still dropping just under $500,000 from the bottom line. It just doesn't compare as favorably to the prior year. Those are the only two. Little Met is the star. Its operating revenues are up 116%. So they're dropping $232,596 to the bottom line. So that's our star performer. These are two that are lagging a little bit. Everybody else is exceeding the prior year and doing extremely well. Again, golf is it's doing well. It's where we want it to be, and we want to just keep refining and improving that as much as we can.
That variance could literally be one rainy weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Enterprise, a couple items that we did highlight. First, concessions is up 36%. Combination, but primarily we were closed down part of 21. COVID was there, so we're open. And then others, which is parking and aquatics and things like that, is up 48.9%. And that's primarily driven by, we'll see this later, by parking. Parking is just a money-making operation for us. I did not highlight this, but we've talked about it. Boat dock fees are down slightly. Again, this is due to implementing the Boat Dock mobile app and the timing of when people paid their annual dues, paying them in 21 so we don't see them in 22. So it's just lagging a little bit. In terms of salaries and benefits, they're up 25.5% year to date. That shouldn't be surprising because if there was a reduction in staff, the substantial, it would have been in enterprise because we weren't open. COVID caused us to shut down for a big chunk of, or a part of 21. So that's up, again, it's up due to returning to staffing, some modest market increases. You can see that their operating costs are up about 20%. Again, same thing, we weren't open as much, now we're open. So those two do not surprise me. If you look at the operating surplus for the month of November, they had a very good month. And we'll go to the individuals, and it does come up at times when we talk about Merwin's Wharf. It is being slightly subsidized in 22. And so we've dug in finance and you know, we have a budget manager now and we're talking with operations. I like to break this down into a manageable piece. So if Merwin's increases revenue just 12%, they're at a break even. So we don't want to get too lost in the fact that they're pretty close to operating at a break even. And it's just 12% that I know on the operating side, they're looking at how do we find that 12% in additional revenue. Expenses, in my opinion, seem to be about right. The staffing level's about right. Unfortunately, commodities and food costs are what they are. We can't change those. So if we can drive revenue a little bit, 12% is not a huge number that can get to a break even.
Wade, yes. If you looked at what the constituents are of that loss, how much is not enough employee, not inability to hire employees? Anyways, what is it just the fact that we haven't been open the whole time, have we?
Correct.
And then we've had hiring problems.
It's a combination, Commissioner. Yeah, we haven't been open the whole time. Trying to find staff in every business is hard. So without staff, you can't serve customers. And then the last piece is getting customers in there. It's a combination of all of those.
Right. I'd love it if you could break that out a little bit for us.
Okay.
It was how many days were we not open? How many were we staff constrained? And how much was just, I mean, it's a judgment thing. But my guess is that we really got to put some more effort on hiring.
But what I'll do is we'll have the full year wrap up in January. And I know Joe's here. I'll get with Joe and we'll try to do a little deeper dive on Merwin's and see if we can come up with some. Joe,
yeah, Commissioners, I mean, the whole summer, we had the happy hour concept, which significantly reduced our hours and our revenue potential. So we fully plan on opening normal service operations the entire summer next year, which should easily make up that 12% and hopefully and then some. You know, so while we did provide service, people are outside there buying lower costs, lower margin items. So we're bringing in revenue on those days and staying open and available to the public, but we weren't open for normal lunch service as we normally would be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we had that happy hour concept that started at 3-4 o'clock. We had other food trucks come in to supplement. When we started hiring, we got to remember, we started hiring back in March, April, previous year, COVID was strong. There was a lot of concern. So we developed this concept to make sure we didn't have to potentially close days and plan for people to come back. So we plan to offer that service every single day, something for everybody. And this next year, we fully intend to be able to be fully staffed, open for normal lunches, Tuesday through Friday, and dinners as normal. So
that kind of
a great example of how things have improved are our holiday hours. We have breakfast with Santa's, our igloos. We made over $22,000 on a Saturday in the summer, which is a record by far. So we came back in droves and we're able to accommodate them.
I was going to ask, because you probably, if you show the trending throughout the course of the year, then that pattern would.
It's getting stronger each month.
Thank you.
Do we have a change in strategy for the hiring, Joe, or how are we going to ensure that we have, you know, there are a lot of restaurants that are open. There are a lot of restaurants that aren't open. What we want to do is,
I think in general, the industry is improving. I think what we're seeing in the ability to hire now in the off season is night and day compared to the year before.
Yeah.
So we're confident our normal hiring practices, which start now, we'll be able to fully staff us for lunch service throughout. We're also looking at different concepts that, you know, people are actually enjoying. I use Saucy Brew Works and others where you kind of go up and you order your own food and you pick it up and bring it to your table. So looking at implementing some different types of service models that reduce the need for staff, but the customer experience is still at a high level that people really like. Looking at implementing that at East 55th and other things to, you know, so we don't need as many staff, and being real creative with our events and the different types of programming that we offer to bring people in to purchase those high margin value type items, you know, drinks and appetizers and things like that for people who are coming after work, really pushing those types of offerings and services. Absolutely. And I think if you've been paying attention to our social media, that's really kind of hit another gear. So kudos to marketing and their help with that. We're really competing in a space and drawing people in. So just the daily dinner service on top of the igloos, on top of the Breakfast with Santas, which are sold out, has increased over 70% from the year previous. So we're very confident. We don't know for sure until we get there, but we're working with HR on different ways to reach out to different groups. We have some ability to bring in temporary staff now with this app. I forget the name of it as I'm on the spot, but to bring people in to help staff up if there is a need. So right now, next year, we plan on opening for lunch through dinner service Tuesday through Sunday like we had back in 2019.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. And that's one of the things I love about working with the staff is that the numbers, we can give you the numbers and say, here's what they are and what the difference is, but there are two things, why, and then what do we do with that data? And as Joe just stepped up and showed, I'm looking at Merwin's and the numbers person says 12%. Well, Joe goes, here's how we're gonna address that. And so that's the neat thing is how are we going to take this information and find ways to improve?
Well, it's funny, before the meeting, we're just talking, reminiscing a little bit, but the data collection and sort of the internal learning curve that we've gotten is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. When you look over the past several years, and just taking that, putting it to work is, mm-hmm, it's impressive.
Yeah. Yes. And then on the last page, we've got some of our star performers. First, Huntington, that's up 47% from last year, year to date. The chalet is up 238%. The chalet was being subsidized at this point last year. It's dropping a profit, and business is picking up at the chalet now, given the time of the year. And then you always want to end with your star, and there's parking. It's up 270%, dropping just over $450,000 to the bottom line that can then be resources that are deployed to other operations within the park district to help us continue to do all the good work we do.
And that's because we have a second lot now, correct? We didn't have that.
It's the 1290.
Yeah,
yeah,
that is correct.
That's amazing.
And so I would close with, and we're 11 months in, but this is our last meeting of the year. Sometimes you can get in the forest and get lost just looking at a tree here or there. But if you look at the forest, the Metro Parks as an organization has done extremely well in 2022. Operationally, there are a few little things we want to fix here and there, but if you were to look at it holistically, things are operating really, really well. Financially, we're in a good position, and we're just going to look to how do we improve that and tweak that as we go into 23. And that's some of the information we talked about when we discussed the budget, and I've talked about with Brian and the chiefs, is how do we find ways to do things even better? You can't just be comfortable with, hey, we're doing well, but we can actually do better. You can always find little ways to improve.
And in January, you can kind of bring back year end 1-2, but then go a few years earlier, correct? It's
just, yeah, I was gonna do more than, because 21 would be kind of a COVID year. Do a couple year look back.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be really helpful, yeah, just to see how we're getting back on track.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. All right, moving on to new business, Brian.
Very well. The very first action item we have is budget adjustment number 12, last one of the year. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. We have a budget adjustment for $1,073,315. I did want to highlight two items because that is a larger number. First, $100,000 of the adjustment is for animal food at the zoo. It's to increase the appropriation. That's covered by existing restricted funds we have. And $500,000 is an adjustment to increase appropriations in capital construction expense for planning and design. Again, this is covered by new restricted money that we have, but we have two projects, so that's $600,000 of the $1 million adjustment. So I would ask for approval of budget adjustment number 12.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next authorization and revision to the change fund and petty cash. This is a long list of people, but they're adjustments based on people, not necessarily the overall dollar amount. So the recommended action falls in the bottom part of page 13, just replacing people with the petty cash.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is 2023 appropriations budget. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. You have before you on page 14, at the bottom of page 14, the recommended budget for 2023 operating expenses, $126,669,732. New capital would be $26,052,139. For a total baseline budget of $152,721,871. You'll see that we are carrying over some encumbrances, just under 25 million. I had originally estimated that would be closer to 20 million. The number's actually higher, and part of that is we just can't get as much work done as we want. In all the Westlake plans, whether it's getting workers, materials, and so those projects will carry into the next year. They've already been approved and considered by this body, but the recommended budget is at the bottom of page 14.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is single source surplus auction. There's a declaration of surplus vehicles through GovDeals, permission for the live auction and single source. This is a way that we are trying to combat lots of different things. Pricing of vehicles has certainly gone up, but we also have been able to realize different sale, different valuations based on equipment leaving. We still work to scour auction sites for equipment, trucks, and other things to help complement the current fleet. So it is a long list of what we've been doing. This has been very consistent with what the Metro Parks has been doing over the last number of years. Recommended action falls in the bottom part of page 16.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the second reading for multiple policies. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. Yes, commissioners, you went through the first reading at our last board meeting. We had significant changes, mostly to improve our processes with respect to our encroachment practices and vigilantly monitoring those and then following up with our neighboring and adjoining properties, and then also reviewed the conservation easement stewardship policy. We have had no additional changes or tweaks to it. So pursuant to the bylaws, this is the second reading, and on today's date, we can adopt the revised policies.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is Euclid Beach authorization to submit a grant application and commit funds. This is through the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund. This is part of the overall vision of what Euclid Creek Reservation will continue to look like. We are looking at an in-kind and cash labor contribution of $500,000 to receive $500,000. We are looking at creating a play space that will continue to enhance the offerings at Euclid Beach and Euclid Creek Reservation. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 19.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
The next is a contract amendment 1660, Cleveland Metro Parks Primate Zoo Cat and Aquatic Building Roof Replacement. This is something we've been working on for a little bit of time. We have been able to now establish the GMP1. We are continuing to work with the schedule for constructibilities, operations, looking at the weather and timing and snow and everything else, but the recommended action to amend the guaranteed maximum price with constructability falls on the bottom portion of page 20 to work on the completion of the roof.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment 1629, design builder for Cleveland Metro Parks Manikiki Management Center. This is the GMP2. We continue to work away with Hummel Construction with the opportunity to work on building out the Manikiki maintenance facility. Interestingly enough, this was talked about two levy cycles ago. So we're very proud to be bringing forward a new maintenance facility. It was by far the worst in the system. And we are being able to move it out of the middle of the golf course as well as part of this overall project to redo this golf course. So the recommended action for the GMP2 with Hummel Construction falls on the mid portion of page 23.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is an award of single source 6717 design of the Garfield Boulevard connector. This is in the Garfield Park Reservation. The board recommended us to enter into agreement with the Cuyahoga County for an intergovernmental management support services agreement for the design of the Garfield Boulevard. This is also in connection with a host of folks that include also the sewer district. This is one of the critical gaps to make the connection. We are proposing to bring forward Michael Baker International for the single source for the design of this. We will continue to provide updates as we're going forward, but this is another great public-public partnership going forward. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 25.
Just a question. Target completion date? Two years? Three?
That'll have to be Sean.
Morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
So we are working with the City of Garfield Heights, the Sewer District, and Cuyahoga County. Cuyahoga County will actually construct the project. We will design it with Michael Baker. The hope here is that in 18 to 24 months, we'll have all the funds stacked. Right now, we're waiting on word from ODNR and their Clean Ohio Trails program. So 18 to 24 months is when we hope to not only have all the funding, but start construction.
And then construction timetable, any idea now?
This is probably a 8-month or 7-month project.
Okay, so we're looking about 3 years out ideally.
Yes, we are.
Okay, thanks. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is Washington Reservation, first leased amendment with the Cleveland Municipal School District. This is for 9 ± acres. The board originally authorized a resolution for a 99-year lease from the Cleveland Metropolitan School District with renewable periods for 52+ acres. We have most recently been working with the need and demand for space at the Washington Park Reservation. We have worked extremely well with CMSD and their whole entire real estate team. We have come up with a very good plan as to how to adaptively reuse the site that has been shuttered for a period of time. And we are very much looking forward to being able to continue and enhance the offerings of the First Tee program. They will have their own building. We'll also be working with the Village of Newburgh Heights on a community building. We'll also be looking at enhanced restroom facilities and practice space for the golf course. So the recommended action falls in accordance with Anthony J. Russo, approved the donation, falls in the mid portion of page 26. I also was part of the meeting with CMSD, and Michelle Johnson from our team did an amazing job walking this through. Recommended action falls in the middle portion of page 26.
Pretty comprehensive. Move to approve.
Second.
I'm going to recuse myself because of the connection to the first.
You're going to abstain.
Abstain, sorry. So can I call the vote? Thank you.
Let's call the vote. All in favor?
All in favor. Aye.
Aye.
Very good. And then one abstention with Commissioner Berry. Thank you.
The next action item is the amendment to the bid renewal for Printing and Mailing Services 6605. This is a bid renewal authorizing printing and mailing services for the Emerald Necklace through EP Graphics for the revised amount. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 27.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the authorization to initiate litigation against the First Energy Corporation. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. As you can see from the write-up, we have been working for over a year and a half to try to resolve the tree cutting that occurred by First Energy. It exceeded the area outside of the right-of-way, and trees that were on our property were cut down. There's a dispute over the survey. Even if their survey is correct, they still destroyed trees outside of that area as well. Even despite steadfast efforts in trying to resolve this without litigation, we are not accomplishing a resolution. So at this juncture, we are seeking authorization to initiate litigation against First Energy Corporation and any subsidiaries or other parties that we need to.
Do they recognize that they still impacted our trees, even if there's a disagreement on the survey, or are they totally saying that they're not responsible at all?
That they continue to hold steadfast that they didn't do anything inappropriate, that they continue to argue that even if those trees that were cut down outside of the survey, they had a right to cut them down because they are arguing that those trees were negatively impacting the new line that was put in. So they continue to offer reasons why there should not be accountability.
Did they provide any proof to support that assertion?
Not at this juncture.
So it's fair to state that the policy that we've just adopted about encroachment is guided communications between us and them all this time. So we've acted consistently with our policy.
That's right. That's right. And our staff has met with their staff multiple times. We've tried to resolve this, but we just have not been able to do so.
Can I ask a question about distance? How far away were they cutting from where our property line is? Is it like 100 feet or is it?
Well, Commissioner, why don't we do that offline and I can go through the survey lines and the areas and distances?
Okay.
Okay.
Recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 28.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next action item we have is the award of bids. Co-op single source recommended actions. I will not go through all of them, but this is really part of the big picture of being prepared for next year. Grass fertilizer technology, police timekeeping software, which has been one of our huge challenges to be able to keep up. Kentico development services, front steps demolition, and then the rest are kind of just add-ons as we go through. So the recommended action for the award of those bids falls on the top portion of page 29.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We'll move into the approval of vouchers and payroll, two resolutions.
Thank you. The first resolution is 22-12-170 at the bottom of page 51. It's for the vouchers issued in the month of November. They've been reviewed by fiscal for legality and they conform with the Ohio Revised Code. The total amount is $11,673,526.93. I would ask for approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The second resolution is 22-12-179 on page 52. Again, this is for vouchers that have been reviewed for legality and they conform with the Ohio Revised Code. These were vouchers issued to Arborware for $991.39.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And Commissioner Moore will abstain.
Terrific. Can we turn the lights up? And we'll move into the public comments. Marty? Good morning.
What are you going to do with all this new money? I'm hoping it will not merely go as plugging recurring losses I have observed. Surprising to see that $50,000 is being moved from seasonal salaries, could we spare them, to marketing this month. Marketing funds are also going to be more than doubled going forward. Is Metro Parks more loved now than it was back when vendor fees picked up the tab and it amounted to so much less? No direct levy advertising, but a big chunk of money went out to media to promote Metro Parks. Especially if you're going to extract even more money from the general fund, we should see breakdowns as to what enterprise or events are getting the marketing money. Are those costs being assigned appropriately? It muddies the water to claim these are general park expenses if they really aren't. What comes from sponsorship dollars versus the general fund? Tell us. Enterprise, as I keep pointing out, is not helping and may not improve going forward. Charges for services have climbed 10% year to date, slightly ahead of the increase in salaries there. Enterprise OpEx, however, has nearly doubled that, resulting in an overall loss. The chalet's success is praised, but I can't see where the $65,000 cost for the chiller upgrades are shown. They seem more like capital than operational. Merwin's Wharf loss, no surprise, grew an additional 25% just last month, not for lack of marketing. These projects were heralded as sparing taxpayers. Instead, we have needed a major levy to support money losers. Smaller snack bars are a service to visitors, but the major undertaking should close down out of season. The private managers at Acacia knew when to give up. Lastly, two other matters. I applaud you for holding CEI responsible, First Energy CEI, responsible for cutting trees beyond their easement. Ironic, though, that for the second month, you are contracting major tree clearing on golf courses. Winter tree clearing is supposed to prevent golfers from noticing the missing trees while getting rid of that nasty shade which harms the turf. Also, NOPEC customers would undoubtedly prefer lower bills over having their money used for highway beautification or for sponsoring zoo lights. Want to enhance roadsides? Then push to get rid of those ugly billboards, which Metro Parks itself has used. Meanwhile, tell NOPEC to just refund any extra money they have. But of course, they are riding off these costs as their marketing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional comments, public comments today? Okay, let's move on to our information and briefing items.
The very first one we have is History Moment Winter Fun. Judy?
Need some winter fun.
Is this still turned on?
No.
It is turned on. Okay.
Good morning, commissioners. How ironic that I'm here on a 45 degree rainy day, right? But, you know, that's Northeast Ohio, and we all know that, right?
You gotta give us the Malloy.
And actually, it's not winter yet, right? Because it's not December 21st. So, usually I get up here and I talk a lot about things that happened a long time ago, because that's where a lot of my interest lies. But this is a little different. I'm not going back quite as far for a lot of this. I'm going back like maybe 10 years, because that's history too, right? So, full disclosure, I did this information item in January of 2017 as we went into the centennial year. So it's almost 6 years ago. I've tweaked it, but I just wanted to say some of these might look a little familiar. So I just love this. Robert Furlong was one of our naturalists here in the 1970s. And this is such a poetic statement that it was in one of the emerald necklaces. I thought it was very cool to introduce this. So right from the very beginning, I will go back, of course, at least somewhat, because I love to. This is a picture from 1930 of Boy Scouts over in Hinckley Ledges taking a winter hike. So even in the early years of the Metro Parks, even in the 1920s and 30s, people were out walking in the winter for winter hikes that weren't even guided by us, but people just got out there, enjoyed them. And then we started offering guided winter hikes. They were one of the first things we did when the nature centers were actually only open during the summer months, but we would have winter hikes where people would gather, bundle up, go do a nature walk, a bird walk, and then come back and enjoy hot chocolate, often offered by the Girl Scouts. So this is an unusual thing. I'm not saying we should bring this back by any means, but I just found it interesting throughout the 20s, 30s, 40s, and this is the 1950s, I found references to this golf archery.
Isn't that Commissioner Morgan?
I'm like, what could possibly go wrong, right? Actually, the newspaper article that I found in the 1920s actually sort of hinted at that. They're like, great idea. Let's put people on the golf course and shoot arrows. So,
they might be onto something, though.
We might be. Well, maybe we can use Nerf, because we've got Nerf arrows now, right? So that would be fun. Of course, there was a lot more ice skating than there are nowadays. We don't have the long, cold winters, though it may seem like it. They're not as long and cold and get the ice frozen for skating like used to be done in the early years. But this is some Strawberry Pond in North Chagrin. Was very, very popular, I understand. I've met a couple people that say, yeah, they remember, and they will say, no, it was Sanctuary Marsh. I'm like, no, I think it was Strawberry Pond, because all our pictures show Strawberry Pond. So ice skating on natural ice was, of course, popular. And then sledding. Sledding is one of those things that was there from the beginning and continues to this day. Several places in the Metro Parks I know of, as I'm driving through in the winter, if we've got snow. This says it's over in Big Creek, the one on the right with the striped scarf. I can't quite figure out where it is when they're saying Big Creek. And the other one was unidentified, but that may be in South Chagrin on that hill there. So, but lots of places in the Metro Parks that are still fun for sledding when we get the snow. But even before we had the chalet, which of course is our star in the winter, there was these toboggan sleds dependent on snow and ice and natural weather at South Chagrin. Again, I can't quite figure out where this is. it didn't say, and it doesn't show up on any maps, but they did put up these toboggan chutes before the chalet. This is from, again, the 1930s or 40s. But of course, the chalet opened in 1967, and one of the first people to go down was Dick Fiegler, a former columnist for the Cleveland Press, writing in his Dick Fiegler way about this himself being the quote-unquote old man. I figured out he was probably 34 at the time, but going up and all the kids making fun of him and laughing at him as he, you know, went up the what he said was 2,000 feet high, because, you know, that's he claimed it to be as he goes down the, you know, yeah, exactly. So let's see, there he goes. Woo, there goes Dick Fiegler. So but of course, originally the chalet was called Winterfunland. I mean, the building itself was called the chalet, the beautiful Swiss chalet. I'm not sure it looks like a Swiss chalet, but I've never been to Switzerland, so maybe I'm wrong. But I've been to Germany, though, and it doesn't look like the ones there. Winterfunland was its name. It was a concession. It was, you know, run through partners. We took it over in the 1980s as a Metro Parks operation. However, we made an improvement in 2012 when we put in lifts so that people no longer have to do this and carry their toboggans back up the stairs. They only have to climb up the stairs themselves, and then the lift does the work for them.
But when was that again, Judy?
2012, and I checked with the chalet because I didn't seem like it was that long ago. Yeah. So I double checked, and yeah, 2012 we did that.
Wow. So those people are smiling.
They are smiling.
Currently at the start. But,
yeah. They got paid.
But yeah, I was going to say, but look, it's a professional photographer there. So, you know, they were probably told to smile if they didn't automatically do it. And then I just added this picture to show a more modern look of the chalet, and that's the lift over to the side there. And then one more picture. This is our own Angelique Hilsman, the manager of our mobile outreach. I think she agrees with Dick Fiegler that it's 2,000 feet high. Her kids, however, are super excited. So, and I told her I was using this picture. I pulled her in my office yesterday, and I said, I'm using this. And she said, oh, that was such a fun day. Kyle did a great. And these are pictures by Kyle Lanzer, and they are great. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So one of the things that when we started doing a lot of outdoor, offering a lot of outdoor experiences with training, if you will, and instruction, was called IGO, the Institute of the Great Outdoors, which started in 1990. This is a picture from, we have lots of picture of IGO. None of them are taken by a professional photographer. So the difference between now and then with photographs is amazing. But these are people learning to cross-country ski in about 1992. And that is something that we still offer when we have enough skates. And this is a picture taken by Kyle Lanzer. You can see the difference in the professional. They're smiling too. So, and snowshoeing, the other program that was started. Actually, I think IGO did not start that one. Even our some of our nature centers had been doing that for years. But I love this because look at these kids. They look like little ducklings following in a row. And, you know, there they go on their snowshoes. And then there's this young lady here. I mentioned at the beginning of this that just taking a winter walk is wonderful. And one of the things that I love in the winter are our waterfalls. They are so gorgeous year round. But, you know, after a heavy spring rain or a heavy fall rain, they're beautiful. But they're also beautiful when they're frozen like this. From clockwise, from the top left, that's Viaduct Falls, the Great Falls of Tinkers Creek. And over to the side is Mill Creek Falls, which is the highest waterfall in Cuyahoga County, attached to our Garfield Reservation. Down below, there is Buttermilk Falls in North Chagrin and Bridal Veil Falls in Bedford. And we do have a lot of hikes, even in the winter, leading to these falls. A couple of our naturalists love doing the hikes out there to the falls in winter. And then you can come back and sit by a fire at various places. This is in Brecksville Reservation. I just think to remind everybody that not all the winter fun has to be outdoors. And then, of course, we start the winter off even before it's winter with our wonderful wild winter lights. And I did some, yes, that is me over there pretending that it's really, really cold and my husband just looking like whatever. Yeah, so. but we enjoyed the lights and just like everybody else does. And I did some research. We started these back in 2019. And then, of course, we had, you know, a blip, and actually they became a good thing during 2020 because we could do the drive through and people could get out and enjoy something in 2020, which we desperately needed. But also we did something starting in 1990 called just simply called Holiday Lights at the Zoo. And it was WDOK promoted that, lasted for about 8 years, and then it kind of faded away. And then we did some zoo lights in between that. And then finally this, which between technology and all kinds of other things, I think are just magical. So again, you can go inside though at the zoo and watch the wolves at Wilderness Lodge, which opened up in 1984, I believe. And I forgot to double check that. I checked it like last week and I'm like, shoot. Wilderness Lodge with the wolves, that's one of my favorite things to do at the zoo in the winter because I love those wolves, and especially if there's snow. And finally, ice fishing. These are some pictures our marine biologist Mike Dirkelek sent me. So these are people ice fishing instead of ice skating. And these are just a couple of the results of that. Full disclosure, I don't get it, but it looks like these people have a lot of fun. Yeah, and Mike was thrilled to share all these pictures with me. So, it's just such a cool way, because even though the ice, it's not great for ice skating anymore, for ice fishing it is. I've seen people doing it in the canal down behind Canalway Center. And finally, at Canalway Center in February, we do a thing called Fight the Frost, which we've been doing since 2013. So it's just activities, and we always hope that there's snow that day. We don't know. If there's not, we do lots of other activities anyway. But when there is snow, we can do all kinds of fun stuff, which is supported by our naturalists at Canalway. And we end the winter in March. It's still winter, and maple sugaring over at Rocky River Reservation, where people get to experience hands-on what it's like, you know, to smell and taste and see that sap coming out of the trees and how it's turned into maple syrup. So as I said, we start off the winter, even before it's winter with wild winter lights, and we go all the way through to March, where we can go out and see maple sugaring and just enjoy the winter all through the months. Thank you.
Kind of makes us look forward to snow.
Makes it look fun.
Yeah. Don't believe her.
Yeah, I just saw Wendy Weirich, as you know, moved from here to Minnesota, and she was saying last week at the NAI conference that she loves the people there. They never complain about the weather unless there isn't enough snow.
Totally different outlook. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy. The next information item we have is Interstate 71 Beautification Project. Looks at reservation. Sean?
Thanks, Brian. Good morning again, commissioners. I want to briefly walk you through the partnership project here, which will really help us address people arriving to the zoo in the Brookside. It is in many ways our front porch and front door. Thanks, Jim. Payback. Okay, so geographically, just to give everybody a benchmark, we're talking about I-71 right here, major interstate that serves many in the area. We are looking specifically at the interchanges, so the Fulton Interchange and the West 25th Interchange. This area really has not been addressed for several years. There's been many kind of trees that have volunteered here over the years and grown up, and actually we've just worked with ODOT to raise and remove several of them as step one of this project. So what we're doing, we are looking at using NOPEC funds through the Energize Community Grant.
That grant helps with both carbon offset and carbon reduction. 100 trees are proposed for the interchange infields. So this is the north side. So this is the southbound lanes, southbound off-ramp and on-ramp to I-71. So we today, if you're familiar with it, we have a nice area here, a planter that has kind of signage for the zoo. We're going to increase our footprint here and plant both of these areas. Moving to the south side, so these are the northbound off-ramps and on-ramps. We're working with ODOT to plant the south side of the off-ramp and the north side. This is the infield of the on-ramp, hopping down to West 25th. The infield here between the southbound on-ramp and southbound off-ramp, and then also on the north side of the off-ramp. Now, interestingly enough, you'll see that there's a parking lot here. Metro Health is using that right now for staging. We're working with ODOT, so after Metro Health is done, then this area would then be restored and replanted. So what we're talking about here is just kind of the first phase of work. And then hopping to the south side of the West 25th interchange, a small amount of plantings on the south side, and then a good amount of plantings in that infield. So I'm not a landscape architect. Mr. Chirazzo is, and he selected these species, so I'm not going to go through the Latin genus and species and all that. But what we're looking at is really introducing some interesting trees that give seasonal variability. So we've got a black gum, sycamore, white oak, and red oak. More interestingly, we will have crab apples, eastern red buds, so that in the spring, you'll see these interchanges kind of pop with color, which is, again, a nice entrance and signing to people that, you know, you are getting near the park and near the zoo. But then we just heard from Judy about winter activity. We don't want to forget in the winter, we want to have winter interest. So we are proposing some eastern red cedars so we have full year color. So what this project represents is a partnership with NOPEC through their Energized Community Grant, $100,000 in funding. We are working with ODOT. Right now, we're actually working through their final approval process. They've let us go out to bid, but we still need final approval from ODOT in their central office. We hope to get that within a matter of days so that we can hit our tree planting window in March through May.
Nice.
With that, any questions?
What would we be, would any of this money come out of our hide? Would it all be?
These are grant funds solely from the Energized Community Grant.
Now, could we get those funds applied somewhere where we would have a more natural experience?
We have worked extensively with NOPEC throughout the entire park district.
It boils down to they need to be spent in specific areas, and we've exhausted a lot of those areas. And I will tell you, having driven by this, one day I just called John Picori and I said, hey, I said, Metro Health is putting $1 billion worth of investment in. I said, we're on the cusp of a $100 million plan. And I said, the entries to, you know, the gateway of our communities look terrible. I mean, trees were bent over, they were broken, they were driven into, they were stepped off.
Very forlorn.
Yep. So it needed a spruce up. And he goes, there are very few people that call ODOT to actually give us something. And I think what Chris, you know, did over a period of time to put together something that actually has year-round appeal, it's a gateway to our community. And I think it's extremely important to change the narrative coming off those interchanges. So that's why the project got started. We have been maintaining them for years because otherwise they would be maintained at an ODOT standard, which would be cut 3 times a year. And that was just unacceptable for us. So we've adopted those. Those gateways. So it is, I'm really, really happy about this project.
Those are beautiful. Yeah, that's a nice mix.
Thank you.
Very last info item we have is the 2022 year in review. Kelly?
Good morning.
We made it a tradition to look back at the end of each year at the accomplishments and many, many achievements of Cleveland Metro Parks. And just with the caveat that we couldn't include everything. So the video is about just over 5 minutes and really took the major highlights and put them together in a highlight reel. So please enjoy. I wanted to give a special shout out to Eric Hewitt, our video producer, and Jeff Tolman for his writing. So enjoy.
And
We have just one more item before we close out the meeting.
Okay. Looks like we have a crowd coming in. Wow. Welcome, everyone.
Well, thank you all for coming. We don't often do this, and thankfully we don't have to do this very often, but unfortunately we have very difficult news to share. Zeke, our canine, most recently succumbed to cancer. He had been working as part of our department since 2019. He received his explosive detection and patrol certification at 16 months and proudly began to serve the department for the past 3 years. As the explosive canine, Zeke played an integral role in several large-scale events in the Park District and in Northeast Ohio on both local and national levels. He participated in sweeps for explosives in several high-profile events. Those events included the Akron Marathon, Goodyear Marathon, the 2022 NBA All-Star Weekend, the 2021 NFL Draft, the 2020 presidential debate, and a weapon sweep in a Youngstown prison, and many, many more efforts. His efforts included keeping hundreds of people safe and attending multiple events. His work did not stop with explosive detection, was also assisting in the apprehension of over 10 criminals, along with several tracks for fleeing and missing persons. He also participated in multiple canine demonstrations and community outreach and served the department very well. So it was with great sadness that we recognize Zeke. Charlie, anything you'd like to say kind of at the end here with all of your professional colleagues?
Appreciate everybody coming out. It goes to show you the group that gets together. They're a tight-knit group. She didn't want to have a formal ceremony because she didn't want to do this, so we tried to put this on for her. And I appreciate all you guys showing up. And on her way in, she said, I didn't expect this many people to come. And I told her it's a testament to her. It's a testament to what the canine groups do. They're a brotherhood, sisterhood. And again, I appreciate all you guys coming out. I wish I had more. I'm not the biggest talker. We did have a plat for you, Christina. Unfortunately, it didn't get in on time. So once we get it, we'll get it over to you.
Let's celebrate his life with a big round of applause. Thank you. That is the last item we have. The next regularly scheduled meeting is January 19th, 2023. We do have an executive session for three items. Rose?
Yes, is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing the purchase and acquisition of real property, personnel matters, specifically the employment of a public employee, and then thirdly, we'll add also collective bargaining.
Do we have a motion?
So move.
Second.
Can you do the roll call, please?
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Bruce Brinker? Dan Moore.
Yes.
We have returned from the executive session. No actions were taken. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful holiday.